So good afternoon. I will now call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:32 p.m. on Thursday, March 7th, 2024. Let the record also reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business today. We have Vice Chair Wilson, Senator Jesse Keel, Senator Lukey Tobin, Senator Rob Myers, and myself, Chair James Kaufman. Staffing the committee today is our Transportation Committee aide, Emma Torkelson, our LIO moderator, Dylan Williams, and Lisa Denny from Records. Before we drive on, please silence your cell phones. So we have only one item on our agenda today, a presentation from Senator Myers on hours of service and electronic logging devices. Presenting today is Senator Rob Myers, two representatives from the trucking industry. Let me get my updated list here to be sure that I'm... So we have Justin Burgess with Odyssey Logistics and Rob Chambers with Odyssey Logistics. And then also representatives from DOT and public facilities, Derek Grimes, planner, DOT and PF, ASD, Highway Safety Office, and Andy Mills, legislative liaison for DOT and PF. With that, Senator Myers, did you want to testify from the... Okay, so please place yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Robert Myers, Senator for District Q. As I believe the committee members are aware, my day job, I drive a truck for a living. And what I'm bringing to you today is an issue that's been kind of slowly building over the last few years. Difficulty that we run into with this one is it primarily has to do with federal law. There's very little we can do here at the state level. But given the large impact that it's having on the state level, I want to put the problem out on the record to make the committee and the legislature aware of what's going on. But just got a short presentation, a few slides to run through here, and then call in some gentlemen from the transportation industry to talk about how it's affecting them and their business. And with that, I'll go ahead and get started here. So, Mr. Chair, we're going to be covering the implementation of the ELD mandate by the federal government at the end of 2017 and the subsequent safety impacts across the state of Alaska. Hours of service are nothing new in the trucking industry. They've been around since the 1930s with the goal of reducing driver fatigue and hence, hopefully, accidents. They represent daily maximum limits that we can be driving or working before a required rest period. Relatively straightforward concept. This is an example of the hours rules that we deal with on a regular basis in the trucking industry. Alaska already has some exemptions compared to the regular federal limits. Those exemptions were written into federal law back in the 1980s. And the justification for those exemptions is that we have longer distances between populated areas up here and fewer rest spots to stop safely along the way. So this gives us more of a chance to get to where we're going and have a safe place to sleep, find food, something along those lines.
We have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, on that previous slide, always eager to display my ignorance, can you explain how that second rule works related to the first one? From a layman's understanding, if you've got a maximum of 15 hours you can drive after 10 consecutive hours off, naturally you may not drive 20 hours after 10 consecutive hours off. So there's a piece I'm missing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chair, to Senator Keel, maybe we didn't quite write it as clearly as we could have, but what that is saying is the 14-hour limit in the U.S. or the 20-hour limit in Alaska is the total amount you may work, not the total amount you may drive. The driving limit is the 11 and the 15. The 14 and the 20 is the amount to work. Once you hit those limits, then you have to take your full rest period before you're eligible to drive again. They can't stop you from continuing to work, but they can stop you from driving.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I too will express my ignorance here. How might this work in a rural or remote area where you might not have enough length of road to, but you might be repeatedly riding on that road for a period of time? Does that still apply the 70 hours?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin. So there is what's called a short haul exemption that would apply in most cases for rural areas. That for that exemption to apply, you have to have a couple of things happen. One is you can't drive more than, I believe it's 100 air miles from your original destination. You have to start and end your day at the same spot. And you, let's see, and it, I believe it's you can't work more than 12 hours in that day. And then you also have to have a record of clocking in and clocking out effectively. So it looks a lot more like a standard job. You're not necessarily keeping track of your exact hours, where I'm driving, where I'm working, where I'm off duty. But there is a short haul exemption. What we're dealing with here today, talking about hours of service, electronic logging devices, this is primarily applying to longer distance trucking, just driving around, for example, Fairbanks in my case, driving around Juneau, driving around Anchorage, driving around Bethel or Nome. The vast majority of the time, that's a short haul exemption, and hours of service and electronic logging devices, for the most part, don't apply. Yep.
Thank you. Let's proceed.
All right. So starting in 2018, the federal government, or excuse me, December of 2017, the federal government has mandated the use of electronic logging devices in the vast majority of trucks to record the hours of service. Electronic logging devices, also known as e-logs or ELDs, have been around for a number of years now, but many companies did not adopt them. The federal government mandated the adoption of ELDs beginning in December of 2017. The goal was to increase enforcement and compliance of the hours of service and also hopefully decrease crashes. But as you can see on this table here, in Alaska, the implementation of the ELD mandate corresponds with a huge increase in crashes that involve commercial motor vehicles starting in 2018, so right as the ELD's mandate went into effect. Crashes went down significantly during the COVID pandemic due to less truck traffic on the road, primarily from lower activity up on the North Slope and elsewhere. We don't yet have the data from 2023, but we expect a significant uptick in crashes that year due to much higher activity on the slope this past year, as well as many newer drivers, especially coming from out of state, not being aware of the conditions that we drive in up here in most cases.
We could just pause there, back on that. I mean, that's a tremendous difference between 17 and 18. And I guess you're going to get into kind of the cause and effect piece of that a little bit more.
Mr. Chair, I plan to talk about it a bit, but that's why I've brought our industry representatives here as well to talk about how it's affected them. And this is the issue, is we have a huge increase in crashes, and it appears to correspond to the ELD mandate going into effect.
And just not to, you know, front run your presentation, but have other jurisdictions seen similar? Is there like any national trend that goes along these lines?
Mr. Chair, we did take a look at the national numbers. The national numbers are not as clear because while we had kind of a drop and then a flat line there around from 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, the national numbers had already been going up at that time as well. You do see a similar to Alaska, you do see a drop in crashes in 2020, 2021. Related to COVID, that's no surprise. Fewer trucks on the road, fewer other vehicles on the road for trucks to interact with. But the numbers there are not as clear. At a minimum, Mr. Chair, I'd say that at the national level, we can at least say that the ELDs probably didn't increase safety. It may not have gotten worse, but I don't think it got better either.
We have a question, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, the top line on this chart So these are crashes with a commercial vehicle. And I see all the injury categories. How should I understand null value? Should I put that in with no apparent injury? Should I? What does that mean?
Mr. Chair, I'd actually like to call my staff up. She's been looking through this data pretty significantly over the last 6 or 8 months, and she can answer that question a little bit better.
Thank you. Please place yourself on the record.
For the record, my name is Teresa Woltsted, staff to Senator Myers. We do actually have online Derek Grimes. He specializes actually in this compiling of data. This is the Alaska crash data set, and he can actually explain all the different types of injuries and whatnot on this area. So I'd like to defer to our actual expert in this field.
That'd be great. I see Mr. Grimes there. Please place yourself on the record and explain this stuff.
Sure. For the record, my name is Derek Grimes. I am the Alaska Department of Transportation crash data manager. So I oversee the transition of our of the crash data reports into the repository that the state of Alaska uses to determine a lot of projects. So through the chair, for Senator Keel, yes, null value should in this case be regarded as a no injury. I could get into the big details of it right now, but there's a blending of two different data sets that cover two different versions of the crash form. And the prior version of the crash form included a included the ability to have a null value. It's kind of a carryover vestigial data thing. So as you see in 2022, we have none of them. We have only recently gotten to the place where we are able to start making some of these little corrections to tidy up the data at a systemic level.
Yeah, and that brings me to the question that, so for the purposes of evaluating the kind of the bottom line numbers of the aggregate numbers, has our method of data capture been consistent enough where if you're seeing a trend, it really is a trend, or has there been any adjustment in how we assess this or capture the data that may have created an artifact, the appearance of an increase?
To the chair, not in 2018, where you see this large increase in CMV incidents. In 2013, we did do a massive overhaul of the crash data form. So any data prior to 2013 would be on the old data form. Any on the 2013 forward would be on the new data form. The method of collection has not changed. We still get them from law enforcement via the DMV. But the type of data, the amount of data we've collected has changed significantly between 2013 and post-2013.
Thank you. So any questions from? Okay. So would please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just got one more slide to go through. And this is just a visual representation of what we're dealing with here. As Mr. Grimes mentioned, there's they had some change in 2013, and so it's a little bit harder to compare the data before that era. But 2010 through 2014, it makes sense we've got a little bit more crashes because you've had more traffic on the road. That was the time when up on the slope, things were a lot busier. We had the oil price crash in 2014, 2015. So 2015, 2016, 2017, crashes kind of bottom out. That's not surprising. 2018 is again the huge huge jump, with over 100% jump that year, and again that's you know very surprising because we didn't have a significant change in traffic that year. Economically, the state was still kind of in a slump. We didn't have a whole lot of activity up on the slope. We do now, but that's not yet reflected in the data because we don't have the 2023 numbers yet. But again, this data is coming from the Alaska Highway Safety Office, from Mr. Grimes and his position. But this is what we're looking at here, Mr. Chair. And you know what we're seeing is that what we believe is happening is that what the ELDs have done by increasing compliance is kind of throwing into stark relief how the hours of service really aren't working for Alaska. They don't take driver behavior into account, and sometimes they encourage drivers to drive when it's unsafe to do so. With that, I'm happy to take any other questions from the committee, but my next step was going to be to turn it over to our invited testimony from the industry.
Are there questions? Senator Wilson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a question for Mr. Grimes, if he's available, Mr. Chair, just asking if there's, is there any data to show whether the trend is continuing on a downward spiral, or is it going back up with after the COVID sort of asterisk years, if you will, and to see if that if there's any data that you're willing to share, preliminary, we won't hold you to them, but just wondering if there's any compilation of any information that would provide us on a trend.
On the record, Derek Grimes, Crash Data Manager, through the chair. There is additional data, Senator. I believe I shared it with Senator Meyer's office, just on the general trend of crash reporting that is happening right now, and it is on a downward trend overall. Specifically for CMVs, you can see it, I think, here in the charts, what the data is doing. Without spending a great deal of time doing a deeper analysis, it's always tough to say. I would say at a national level, there's been talk about driver behavior coming out of COVID being worse and us being prepared to see a greater increase in the number of crashes as kind of a bounce back. But Alaska is always different, unfortunately, which is part of the reason that we see some of these numbers the way we do.
Follow up. Just as a follow up, and I would just refer to the 2023 numbers compared to 2022.
I would not put a number on that one right now. We have an issue with our 2023 data set on delivery. What we have seen, if I put the numbers to it, I guess I would see that it would fall in line with what the trend is now, this kind of declination or declining trend a little bit. So at 300, but it largely would depend on the details of the year.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Grimes, do we have sufficient detail in the data we get to adjust a chart like this by commercial motor vehicle miles driven, or is that more information than we collect?
Through the chair, that would be a large combination of a few different data sets. We would need to pull in the traffic data, sections data, as far as the vehicle miles traveled per segment of road. We would need to have a GIS analyst map the crashes, and then we could do some very fancy work within the GIS environment to really figure out, you know, which areas, which roads would be affected in crash ratings and things like that. But it would be a concerted effort that would have to happen between several different data sets and departments, potentially.
Mr. Chair, just to comment on that, we have seen some national sets on miles driven per year, but we haven't been able to find anything specific to Alaska.
Any other questions? And so at this time, Senator Myers, do the testifiers that I see here on the board, I see Stephanie King, Chief of Permits, Robert Chambers, of course, Mr. Derek Grimes, and Justin Burgess. They're noted as being here for questions if needed. Do any have statements that you're?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Burgess at a minimum should be here for a statement. I believe Mr. Chambers as well.
Okay, so going down the board, so Mr. Chambers, are you online?
Mr. Chambers had to step out for a moment. He is normally with me in the office. This is Justin Burgess.
Okay, well, we'll go to Justin Burgess then, since you volunteered.
Okay, my only issue that I see as a leading role for hours of service mainly is the sleeper hours of service and the splits that we are allowed. As a driver travels on the road, they can only split their sleeping hours either 8 and 2 or 10 hours off duty. As we have a more aged truck driving environment in Alaska, for a gentleman that wants to stop and take a 1 hour nap on the road in a safe haven, he is penalized for taking that 1 hour off, and he loses another hour in his daily logs. that's the main issue that I see with the hours of service, is the way our sleeper berth is split up.
Thank you. Any questions or comments for Justin? I don't see any. How about, I see Stephanie King here. Do you want to touch base with Stephanie King,
Senator? Mr. Chair, if she has anything to say, she's welcome to, but I understand that she was here just to comment if we had questions on the data. Okay.
All right. Well, we've heard from Mr. Grimes. Mr. Chambers stepped out, and Justin just spoke. So that appears to be our testifiers. Brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record. And so Senator Myers, just to recap, folks, we took a brief at ease, but we were trying to get our arms around the issue. And you were going to discuss the impact of the devices with respect to the, I guess, the slots for sleeping, resting.
Mr. Chair, so as a commercial driver, when I fill out my logbook, and whether this is a paper log or on the electronic log, I have four different things that I can call my time: driving, on duty, not driving, off duty, or sleeper berth. Mr. Chambers brought up issues with the sleeper berth. If I take 10 hours off in order to reset my clock to be able to drive again the next day, I have to take 10 hours off straight. My sleeper berth, I'm allowed to split as long as I'm in a truck that has a sleeper berth, because some don't. And so there's different advantages to using those two pieces there. What is going on here, as Mr. Chambers mentioned, is back when it was paper logs, we'll just be a little bit honest about it, people would fudge their logs a little bit. If I was on my way up to Prudhoe, I was getting a little bit tired, you know what, I'll pull over, maybe I'll take a half hour cat nap, finish the rest of my trip into Prudhoe. That half hour, I would, honestly, I would often log that as I took my 10 hours in Prudhoe. And I wasn't necessarily logging that half-hour cat nap. Can't do that anymore with electronic logs. It's strict compliance. And the issue with that is that because I now am, I'm now held to that, I'm to some extent encouraged to continue driving when I'm tired. I can't move things around a little bit to make it look good for DOT commercial motor vehicle compliance. One possible solution to this would be to ask the federal government to change the sleeper berth rules so that I don't have to take my full 10. I don't have to take just the 8 and 2 split. I can split it however I want. Split 1 hour first, 9 hours later. On the back end of that, for myself and a lot of other drivers, we don't sleep 8, 9 hours, 10 hours in the sleeper often. You know, I usually sleep 6 or 7, and then I wake up and I'm sitting there and I can't move my truck for 3 or 4 hours. And I'm losing time that I could be driving, and I'm gonna get tired again later in the day instead. That's one example. We could run through similar examples of it's because I am held to that strict compliance, I am encouraged to continue driving into heavy traffic when maybe I should pull over and wait an hour. I'm encouraged to continue driving into bad weather when maybe I should pull over and wait until the weather passes.
I see the situation. Let me, so it's one thing to point at a problem. It's another to actually try and do something about it. So on page 3, I guess it is, of your presentation, you have, you know, the standard U.S. case versus the Alaska case. And mm-hmm. so there's a difference there. So we've got exemptions or leniency or whatever. By what means did that difference between basically federal policy except for Alaska come into being with this?
Mr. Chair, that is straight federal statute.
Okay. So
it's not even a regulation issue. That's straight federal statute, and we can thank former Senator Ted Stevens for putting those exemptions in for Alaska.
Right. Okay, so that got baked in at that point. So again, in the theme of it's one thing to identify a problem, another mm-hmm. to do something, are you anticipating doing a resolution asking for our delegation to change something in this respect?
Mr. Chair, that is an avenue that we were looking into, given that this was a relatively niche topic. We wanted to bring it before the committee first to help spread awareness of what the problem actually is. But ultimately, yes, any change that we're going to make is going to have to be done at the federal level. My understanding is the sleeper berth changes can be made through regulation. The hours that we've got up here on the screen, as I mentioned, that's directly federal statute. I don't really see people asking for significant changes in these laws. Changes in how we can split our sleeper berth. I've had a number of drivers and company owners suggest that to me as one way to go about it. But as I mentioned, I wanted to bring it to the committee first.
Yeah, this has been interesting, and a moderating thing in terms of, you know, how serious this is that there seemed to have been a spike. It makes you almost wonder if it was people, you know, kind of trying to punch buttons while driving. So when you see the spike in 2018 where it really peaks and then it trends down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess the question is, do we really have a durable trend in a negative direction that we need to address? And I think from what I'm seeing right here, maybe not, but maybe it's worth keeping an eye on.
Mr. Chair, that is something that I've taken into consideration as well. In theory, I would have liked to have done this a couple of years ago, but with COVID and throwing off all of the traffic, I felt that it was better off waiting a little bit longer to get some more numbers in there before bringing it forward. Because if I had tried to do this in 2021, that, you know, people would have looked at me and said, "Well, you've got COVID to deal with. We have no idea what the trend is." As I said, Mr. Grimes was talking about crashes going down. I believe crashes statewide are likely going down, total crashes, but anecdotally, commercial motor vehicle crashes are going up. I don't have numbers for that. All I can tell you is that the number of people I've been talking to around the state, different companies, different drivers, seeing the number of crashes, especially up on the haul road this last year. And again, a lot of this just due to you've got more trucks on the road, newer drivers. To Senator Keel's point, more miles driven tends to lead to more crashes, and that's regardless of other circumstances.
And there have been some changes to the CDL training requirements, so at the federal level.
Mr. Chair, yes, those entry-level driver training requirements went in, off the top of my head, I'm wanting to say 2019, but I can't say that for certain at the moment. I'd have to go look again. And that did change at the federal level. I'm not sure how much effect that would have had just yet, as everybody with a CDL before that is already grandfathered in. But for newer drivers, yes, that is an issue, and that's come in.
All right. Do we have any questions from the committee? Senator Tobin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I can ensure I understand correctly, when you are requesting or thinking about a resolution to request an exemption. Is that only for the state of Alaska, or is that for every state? And are there other states who have penned a similar request?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I haven't heard anything from other states yet. In the data that we have seen so far, I haven't seen another state that had data this stark when the ELDs went into effect. As I said, at the national level, it was a lot more murky as to exactly what was going on there, because there was already an increase in crashes before the ELDs went into effect. So it's a lot harder to talk about cause and effect. The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration actually did slightly change the hours or the sleeper split law. I believe that went into effect I think it was near the end of 2020. Instead of just doing an 8-2 split, you can do a 7-3 split. Helps a little, not a lot. I'd like to see that go the other direction. I want to have the problem that I have with the 8-2 or 7-3 split is that makes me take the large chunk first, the small chunk later. Personally, I'd rather take the small chunk first and take the large chunk later, you know, because that gets me that little catnap that I need to get me the rest of the way to my destination, instead of making me take the big chunk off and then have to take a little catnap later on. That works better for my biology. I'm sure, you know, some other drivers may view it a little bit differently, but whether this becomes just an issue for Alaska or an issue for the rest of the United States, personally, if I ran something, I would say at least give us an exemption for Alaska and say, hey, while you're at it, why don't you look into the data for what else is going on around the country?
Any other questions? Perhaps. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a fascinating inquiry, and I feel like I want to dig a little deeper. Do we have information on driver longevity? Driver experience. do we have information on the relationship between this spike and subsequent apparent tail down, and when the least experienced drivers were hitting the road? What was how did the mean, median, and mode of our driver experience change in Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I can tell you a little bit anecdotally from my observations being in the industry since 2009. I can't give you data. If somebody has collected that data out there, that would be great, but I don't know if that's something that anybody has collected. Alaska, because of what our economy was doing through there, what we saw is a combination of a couple of issues. One is, like across the rest of the country, across all industries, during that time period, you have baby boomers retiring, of course, and a lot of truck drivers fit into that category, that got into truck driving in the 70s and 80s. I do still know a couple of people that were driving the haul road back during pipeline construction, but there are not very many of them. at the same time, because of trucking or because of the oil price crash in 2014, 2015, a lot of truck drivers, even if they didn't necessarily leave the profession, they did leave the state. And so while you had a few new drivers coming in there, just natural churn, wasn't very many as far as a percentage of the drivers overall, because there wasn't a lot of opportunity for truck drivers in Alaska in the 2016, 2017, 2018 years. The last couple of years, 2022, 2023, a lot more opportunity is opening up, especially this last year. I would love to see data, but I don't know of anybody that has collected it.
Follow up?
So I guess one more on a slightly different topic. You talked about ways with the paper log books that drivers would adjust their behavior to stay as close to compliance as they're able. Are there adjustments you've seen since the electronic logs that drivers have used to adapt to these situations?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, it's a lot harder for that to happen. It is possible, but a lot harder. So, for example, if I had a problem with a paper log, I rip the sheet out and I can start over. if I have an issue with an electronic log, I have to call my company and say, all right, what has happened a fair amount over the last couple of years is I've had to call the company and say, hey, the shop drove my truck into the shop and back to its parking spot to work on the truck while I was off. The truck logged that as driving, and now all of a sudden I don't have any hours, and I have to call the company and say, please fix this. And that becomes a bit of an ordeal, because depending on how it is set up, what brand of machinery you're using, sometimes the company can handle that themselves. Sometimes they have to call the vendor and have them change it. And of course, since the company is now doing it, or maybe even the vendor, you know, some national vendor, they're always looking at it saying, all right, why is this happening? And now if it's something like, oh, the shop drove my truck, I was off, I've been home the last 2 days, that's not a big deal. They write it down, you know, just to note it, so that if we get an audit from Department of Transportation, Commercial Vehicle Enforcement, then they can say, oh, well, I see you changed your log, because it records every time you change it. But I also see why you did it. That makes sense. We're not going to have a problem here. If I start calling them, you know, every other day and saying, hey, can you change this for me to make things a little easier on me? They're going to tell me no. Because they know that change gets recorded, and they don't have a reason to tell DOT that you know, this wasn't an issue of the equipment malfunctioned, or somehow it got credited to me, some drive time got credited to me instead of getting credited to somebody else, such as the shop or another driver who borrowed my truck. It is possible to alter them, but you're not going to alter them for the same reasons and at the same frequency potentially that it had happened in the past.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So are there any other questions from the committee? Any closing statement from our testifiers?
I don't know if Mr. Burgess has anything to say. For myself, Mr. Chair, I just appreciate the committee's time. As I said, this is a bit of a niche topic, but if you're going from 300 crashes in a state as small as ours up to 700 crashes in a year, I believe it's something that's worth investigating, worth looking into. So.
Thank you. I'll just say anecdotally, former life, I did a lot of long distance driving in the lower 48 for business. And I know that it was amazing the positive effect that just pulling over in a very brief catnap can keep the tendency to doze off when it's hitting you. So it doesn't take much to get back going. So I appreciate this presentation today. And so I guess with that, we'll go ahead and move on if there's no further questions. And so with no questions, I want to thank the committee members and our presenters for being here today. I want to thank the invited testifiers for taking their time to be here with us. Our next meeting, there will be no committee meeting next week, so our next regularly scheduled meeting will be Tuesday, March 12, 2024 at 1:30 p.m. Any closing comments from the committee members? If not, so this meeting is now adjourned at 2:11 p.m.